If a player cleans his ball during play of a hole, except on the putting green, he shall incur a penalty of one stroke. That's a rule, Jerry.
But it's just a friendly game. Why do you always have to be such a stickler?
Because that's the way I was raised.
Welcome to Spirit of the Game, brought to you by the Colorado Golf Association. Now here's your host, Ed Mate.
Okay, round two.
All right, take two. We're back for another edition of Spirit of the Game, back by popular demand. We got a groundswell of just compliments from last month's podcast with the, and I'd like to think it was because of me, but something changed. So it has to be the variable that changed, and that was our guest, Aaron Gurecka. Welcome back.
Well, thanks for having me again for round two. Here we go.
Yeah, round two. So, we wanted to get this one in before the end of the year because, let's be honest, why do we have handicaps? We have handicaps because we like to compete. And some of us like to compete so much that we cheat. And we have a euphemism for cheating when it comes to handicapping called sandbagging. And I did a little research, which is very easy to do anymore. All research has been eliminated by ChatGPT. The term sandbagging originated in the late 1800s. You got to do the history lesson last time, Aaron, so I'm doing it this time.
Perfect.
From criminals who would literally use a sand-filled sock or bag as a weapon to hit or stun a victim from behind. This original violent meaning evolved through a middle step in poker where a player would conceal the strength of their hand to let others raise the pot before betting big later. From there, the term broadened to its modern meaning of strategically hiding one's true strength or intentions to gain an advantage later. I thought sandbagging was had to do with horse racing, and they actually literally put extra weight on the horse in the trials to make them run slower and get them, and then they take off the weight. But who knows? That obviously wasn't correct.
Your definition is spot on to what I would thinking or what I would think the definition came from. But honestly, I got to tell you, I have never wondered where sandbagging came from until this discussion. Yeah. So
there you go. Well, you know a lot about the topic, even though you didn't necessarily dwell on the term itself. So I just want to I'm going to riff here for just a minute on my personal opinion, view, experience with sandbagging. So sandbagging for the CGA has been something we have paid quite close attention to. We did a survey years ago, and Aaron Kello, who's the man behind this, he's our engineer here producing this video. He'll appreciate this. We did a survey many, many years ago, and we said, what would be, of these five things, what would be the thing you'd like to see most out of your CGA membership? And we listed discounts on golf, and we listed, you know, a magazine or deals at golf courses, whatever it may have been. And one of them was a foolproof way to stop sandbagging. And by far, that was the number one choice in the response. And probably as much as things change, they stay the same. So in response to that, we thought, what could we do to do a better job supporting clubs and just, you know, managing the inevitable sandbaggers that are out there. And we created an exceptional score reporting system where we somehow or another, I think this was back in the Warren Simmons days when he was the executive director and kind of the statistician of all statisticians. And he came up with some chart that showed the probability of shooting certain number of strokes below your handicap. And we then published that report. So public golf courses, private, whatever, could report scores. And we would be the warehouser of that information. And this was really even before exceptional tournament performance in the handicap system. And it turned out to be quite the conversation piece. And the then publisher of the Colorado Golfer newspaper, John Edwards, thought it was so much fun, he published them. And so then we got this sort of report that came out monthly. And people either loved being on the list because they did play an exceptionally good round, or they hated it because they were being outed for being a sandbagger. So anyway, just sum it up to say sandbagging has always been and will always be part of any instrument that is sort of saddled with or dependent upon human nature and the desire to win at all costs. So that's the preamble to this conversation. So where do you want to pick this up? So let's just start with what does the current world handicap system do to combat sandbagging?
Well, before we get into that, I just want to say there's two kind of metaphors or sayings that I know that will always be consistent throughout the years of golf and other sports is if you ain't cheating, you ain't winning, right? That's one that I hear a lot. And then the other one is from my predecessor, Jerry Brown. The first thing he said is one thing you'll learn in this business is cheaters are always going to find a way to cheat, or cheaters are always going to cheat. So let's just say that that holds true even 8 years later. So but anyway, well, so the World
Well,
Handicap System.
let me just interject there, because you know me, it's my podcast. I get to interject. Okay.
Okay, please do so.
No, I'm being serious here. The whole premise of the handicap system really hinges on a very simple idea that you're going to try your best. You're going to try your best and you're going to post all your scores. And if you don't do those two things, if you don't try your best at all times and post all your scores within, we'll talk about the scores that the few scores that you can't post, then everything falls apart. Because I mean, you can never stare into somebody's soul and say, "Were you trying to make that one?" I mean, that's the old sandbagger's adage: never make a putt you don't have to. So anyway,
Correct.
we'll get into some of those details later. But so where how does the current system identify exceptional tournament performance, if we want to use a euphemism, or sandbaggers?
Yeah, so, well, the WHS has built in essentially systems or triggers that tries to do its best to catch anybody who is trying to game the system. Because prior to the WHS, there were eight governing handicap bodies, if you will. And then prior to 2019, when the WHS was created, each one had their own kind of way of doing things in terms of handicapping. You had the USGA doing their way. You had, Australia doing their own. You have over the pond there doing their own thing. So, in the effort to make a truly World Traveling Handicap Index, all of them came together and said, "Hey, let's combine what we know works. Let's try to get rid of what we know that doesn't. And let's come up with a system that not only is equitable amongst competitors across all tees, all golf courses, but also across all countries, as well as trying to maintain the standard of golf. That handicap index is the one and only handicap index, and it is, will have its flaws, but is going to be able to identify those trying to cheat the system." And so I think with, pulling a little bit from here and a little bit from there, they've created something that has done that. Is it perfect? No. Kind of as we talked about the course rating system last time, there's no perfect system as much as we would like to think. But I think the WHS or the World Handicap System does a great job in creating a handicap index based off of tools that we'll get into here during this discussion, of stopping not only the rapid increase of a handicap, which most of the time was seen right before a big money game, member guess, something like that, but it also does a good job of accurately depicting the true ability of a golfer over a period of time. So hopefully that answers the premise of your question, although I know there's a lot of gritty details that we can get into today. So,
So
but
yeah, let's just talk
I
about how explain exceptional tournament performance, explain how scores are categorized and how the system flags somebody's performance, we'll say in casual golf versus in competition golf and kind of how that works.
Perfect. Yeah. So there are some safeguards built into the system because now, with the system being cloud-based, it's able to handle a whole lot more at once. And so, what the system does is it looks at every single score that you post, whether it be a competition score, home, away, whatever the case may be. It looks at every single score that is either posted by the player and or by the committee in charge of competition. And what happens is if a score is 7 strokes or more different in terms of differential from what your handicap index at the time the score is posted, it'll actually trigger what is known as an exceptional score reduction. So if it's between 7 to 9.9 strokes lower than what your handicap index at the time the score is posted, it'll actually automatically, based on that math, reduce that score differential, but also the previous 19 score differentials as well, thus decreasing the handicap a little bit. Because this, again, the system is built to kind of, it knows that you'll decrease, but rapidly decreasing is kind of a hint there. And then if you go even higher than that, the system will not only give you a minus one, but it'll add an additional point to that. It'll give you a minus two reduction to not only that score differential, but the previous 19 as well. And then for those of you that don't know, your handicap index isn't an average of your scores, it's an average of your score differentials. So if, a minus two reduction is happening to not only the score you just posted, but to the previous 19, that is directly going to affect immediately that score posted and your handicap index. So that's one of the big safeguards that they built.
Didn't realize that because again, I go back to tournament scores, exceptional tournament performance, 10-3, really dated stuff back in the dark ages when you did have differences from country to country. There was no world handicap system. It really, when you go back even one step further in the basic DNA of a handicap, the very first formula is a protection against sandbagging by taking eight of your best 20 or eight, your eight best, I'm sorry, out of your most recent 20. That already has identified your potential, not your average. So as a result, we're taking a recent snapshot, we're focusing on the eight best. So already you're already hedging against somebody having an outlying score affecting their handicap. I never really thought about that. Just that basic premise is really a hedge against sandbagging in some respects.
Pretty much. Again, it's been kind of built over the years, and it used to be 10, the average of your lowest 10 differentials out of your 20, and then there was a bonus for excellence is what it used to be called. But now they took two of those off, thus kind of creating a more accurate potential. And then that's also a lot of thing or something that people got to remember is that a handicap index isn't just the way you're playing now, it's your potential to be able to play over a period of time.
Okay. Talk about hard cap, soft cap, all that good stuff.
This we get a lot of emails on this internally, our team and I. And a soft cap is essentially or was created with the introduction of the WHS. And what it is it's a mathematical difference between your low handicap index, which every golfer now has access to see, and what your current handicap index is. When your current handicap index gets to 3 strokes above your low handicap index in a period of time, your handicap is going to be given essentially a haircut, is what you can think of it. But it's also known as a soft cap. There's a mathematical equation that goes into that, but it essentially allows your handicap index to still increase, but not increase rapidly, if you will. And then based off of that, your handicap can keep increasing up to a certain point. And that point is 5 strokes above your low handicap index. As soon as your current handicap index gets to that 5 strokes, you're essentially stopped. The system will not allow you to go higher than that in a 365-day period unless that low handicap index increases. So again, just another safeguard built into the system, because you can go down as much as you want, but the system will limit you to go up, or will limit you on how high you can go up and how quickly you can get there.
Yeah, I've always equated it metaphorically to a deer fence. It's really easy to go down, but it's really hard to get back out of that fence if you're a deer on the trying to cheat. Any deer is trying
That's one metaphor you can use for sure. Yes,
to.
I always do a hurdle and a wall. You can get over the hurdle, it just takes a little bit of effort, but once you get to the wall, you can't really get up it unless
Yeah,
you
you're stuck.
yeah.
Yeah.
So
Okay, so in terms of those who think that the handicap system should be based only on tournament scores, what is your answer to that? Because I hear this a lot. They say the handicap system, I don't care what you shot on a given Tuesday. I want to know in competition what you shoot. And we used to refer to these as a tindex, a tournament only index. And I know there was a time when some of our men's clubs, I don't think the women's clubs, this was really much of an issue, but on the men's club side, you can infer in that what you'd like, would use that approach. Is that still something that happens? Does the system do that automatically? What's happening in that realm these days?
Well, so a tindex, if you will, or a tournament index is not the handicap index. So a tindex is specifically localized to whatever club that is a part of. I do got to say that that is still being used because, again, local knowledge is key for a lot of these clubs. So if you play a golf course way more than you do other courses, there's going to be essentially a lower differential that you shoot just based off of the local knowledge you have of the course. So your differentials pr will probably be a little bit lower there than they are at other courses you play once or twice every year. So that being said, you're automatically going to have lower differentials at your home course. And then for some people, they just happen to play better in competition. Like for whatever reason, the pressure, the moment, whatever the case may be, they just happen to play lower in competition, than they do regular scores.
By the way, do you
But
believe
again,
that? Do you actually believe that? Let's hold up your hand, put your hand on this Bible. Do you believe that? Do you believe that animal actually exists?
I mean, if his name is Tiger Woods, yes.
Yeah, exactly.
The thing about Tiger Woods was he was able to take that and, do it every day, no matter who asked him, no matter if it was a competition or anything. So, that saying there, I play better in competition. I'm neither here nor there. I plead the
Yeah.
fifth on that because
Okay.
jury's still out. But
Okay. Well, I kind of interrupted you. Keep going with the tindexes. So you were talking about how, and I hadn't really thought about that. You do have, I thought about this a lot, but not in the relation to tindexes, that you definitely have a home course. You play better on your home course than you do when you try. That's just true. Local knowledge, right? So you're already, if you're playing in competitions at your home course, those scores are going to be lower. Just, casual tournament or otherwise. So I hadn't really thought about that. Then you have the performer, the person who really does relish the competition, pays more attention, grinds a little harder. Okay. So what else? So the upshot of that is, what is our official position when it comes to the allowance of tindexes for, I think you already answered when you said it's up to the local committee, but what is the official
So
WHS view of them?
the official WHS view is it is up to the committee. The committee in charge of competition is in charge of everything regarding handicaps and then for the tournament. But then the committee in charge of handicaps or the individual's handicap committee is in charge of the person's handicap index. So the tournament committee can use whatever data that they have that they want to equalize the field.
Right. Do you think that that's a what advice counsel do you provide if you have a club that calls and says, we're really having a problem with sandbagging? What is your pat answer to that question?
Well, I would say there's multiple tools out there that you can use. One of the quicker, easier ones to do is flight your field. The other one is to use handicaps over not only 1 year, but multiple years. And then the third one is definitely use competition scores over multiple years. Because usually, competition scores usually equalizes the field there. But also you perhaps even use low handicaps over a period of time, whether it be a smaller period of time versus 365 days. But yeah, that would be kind of my top three answers.
Well, just to personalize this, because I love talking about me, best subject ever, by the way.
Perfect.
No, I'm a two handicap. And again, does that mean I go out and shoot even par every time? Not even close. I shoot a lot more low 80s than I do low 70s. But remember, on a good day, 8 out of 10 times, 8 out of 20 times, history has shown that my index and my ability, my potential lives in that two area. But I have to confess, there was one tournament that I played in for many, many years. I've stopped playing in it. In the Colorado Women's Open, there's a pro-am competition, and you get paired as a net amateur to play with a professional, and it's so much fun. I've gotten to play with Lauren Coughlin, who's now done really well on the LPGA Tour, Jennifer Kupcho, many others. But as a two handicap in that tournament, I get two strokes, and those are the only holes I kind of know if I can make a par, I can contribute on this hole, make a net birdie. And what I didn't realize is they used your low index for the year. So I showed up 1 year and I got, because I was a one at one time, and I got one shot. Well, that was the difference between making the cut and not making the cut, because I don't make a lot of birdies, but I can make a lot of pars and help my partner here. So anyway, my point is, when you use a low index, that can do a lot of things to really eliminate people's, take a lot of enthusiasm out of a sandbagger's game, don't you think?
Oh, 100%, 100%. And the one thing I'd would recommend there too is whatever you decide to use for whatever is best for your league, make sure that people know it before they show up. Because if they don't, then that's when people usually hear and usually when we get phone calls. But once everybody knows, you equalize the field using the same number for everybody, and hopefully that'll do the job.
Do you think that most member guests now use low index?
They use some form of low index, I think, just because a lot of people are multi-members. They go down south for the wintertime, come back up here for the summertime, and this way they're using a bigger sample size of multiple courses where people are members of.
Okay.
Yeah, particularly for those member guest tournaments too.
Right. Because I think that's been a huge change in, because it used to be kind of a free for all, the Wild West. It was just index. It was really easy to manipulate. There was no difference between a tournament score or anything else. I mean, it's come a long way. And I think it's become a lot more challenging for the cheaters to hide than it once was. This is probably I'll try to keep us connected to the topic at hand, and that's sandbagging. But I just took a call recently, or I got an email and forwarded it to you, and it was somebody complaining about their course rating. And again, why does this fit into sandbagging? Well, we all know that when if your home course rating is incorrect, or you feel like it is, and it's either too high or too low, usually it's the latter. They don't like it to be too low. They quote unquote can't travel. I can't travel with this handicap. Again, what is your response when you hear that, which I know you do on a fairly regular basis? And I don't know how often, but when somebody says my handicap doesn't travel.
Well, I have two answers really. I'm like, well, what makes you feel like it doesn't travel? Is it just because you're not scoring well there? Are you a member of a club there? Or are you playing multiple courses in that area? Because from what I remember, the average golfer plays about 3 strokes higher at a course they're unfamiliar with than a course they are familiar with on average. Again, that might not, equate to everybody, but on average, that's kind of what it is. So then I go into a deeper conversation, because again, the one thing that our team wishes we can do is we wish that we can rate all the courses in the world. This way, one team that has the same training does all the courses, but unfortunately, that is bigger than a one team job. And so that's why we have, all the AGAs we do. But the one consistent thing is we're using the same book. And that same book is what allows us to rate golf courses using the same parameters, if you will. And so the hope is that the courses that you're playing have been rated up to, the newest standards of the newest book. Sometimes it just isn't. And some courses haven't been rated in a while. So in cases like that, in that case, one course is, freshly rated, and another course in another state may not be rated for 2 years and is still rated from, 2 books ago. So sometimes it's kind of that easy, in terms of it's just hasn't been rated up to the newest standard yet. But nobody likes to hear that. Everybody's like, well, it
Right.
should be, and this, that, and the other. But with everything, it takes time, and there's not a real good answer to that. It's just more of a conversation of, well, what makes you feel that way? Because again, supposedly the rating should be, the equalizer throughout the country, regardless of which state you're in and when you play.
Right.
But some people feel like that isn't the case.
So you kind of touched on a couple of things there to sort of narrow the lens here. Because the travel part, and that was something I was going to bring up, is people who go, the snowbirder who goes to Arizona, the desert, and comes back with a completely different handicap. I've heard a lot of Colorado professionals basically say, I'm not accepting that handicap that you just winterized down in the desert and
Correct.
come back and start winning everything. That's kind of separate from what I was getting at. What I was getting at is when a course feels their course is rated too easy, right? They're, and I always get this confused. It's like the reverse. They want their handicap to be high, and they feel like their handicap is rate their course is rated too easy, and therefore their handicap's lower than it should be. You following me, or did I get this wrong?
It's actually the opposite. So the lower the rating, the higher the handicap.
So that it's rated. Well, I'll let you fill in the blanks here. I'm still losing my own train of thought here.
So
You know where
if
I'm
you
getting at.
have So if you have a lower rating, the higher the handicap index. The higher the
Right.
rating, the lower the handicap index, but the higher the course handicap.
Right. Right. So the point I'm making is when people feel that their course is not rated correctly and their handicap is too low, and then they go play another golf course and they don't have that's really what I'm because that's the most recent, not to call out names, an email I forwarded to you was an anonymous golfer pointing out an anonymous golf course where they felt the rating was not correct. So what have you responded to that golfer and when you do, what will you tell them?
Well, essentially, kind of what I mentioned is like what makes you feel like the rating is incorrect? Because as we talked about last time, 90% of a course rate is the length. So if the course is rated, if the course, if both courses or if that course is of length of 7,000, you're automatically going to get a rating that is much higher than a course at 6,500 or even 6,000. So, more when a question like that comes in, it's more of an education opportunity than it is more so, well, this is correct because I said so situation. Because, as we talked about last time, there's hours and hours of data and training and everything that goes into coming up with the rating and slope. So for somebody to say, it's rated incorrectly, the question is why? Why do you think that? Because, we did our side. We did our data implementation, data confirmation, all that good stuff. But, and then we get an email saying it's wrong. And then the question is why? Because there will always be somebody who will say a rating is incorrect. And there's always be two other people saying, no, we like the rating the way it is. So you
Right.
can't please anybody.
Okay. So I think we probably said enough about the winter handicap. Do you get that comment a lot where, when we thaw out a winter and folks come back from their warm weather climates, about the handicap returning mysteriously higher? Or is that kind of, is that, is that, was, has the
It's
hard cap and soft cap sort of stop some of that?
the hard cap and soft cap to stop some of that. It's still ongoing though. But the actually if for those of you who have made it this far in the podcast, here's
It's
a
worth
little
the wait for the
quick.
drum roll. Okay, this is why they're
Here's a
still
quick
listening.
little introduction, because the USGA is actually going to roll out what is known as the L score. Also known as the league score. So moving forward, actually leagues will be able to essentially take or figure out what your league score is based off of all the leagues that you play in. So whether that be in Arizona, Florida, Colorado, Wyoming, California, whatever, it'll be able to keep track of what your L score is versus what your handicap currently is
I like
and what your
that.
low handicap index is, which I've been, harping on for years that there should be a league-based score.
I think they should call it, I just wrote this down so I didn't screw it up, a GSC score, which is
GSC.
golf shop credit.
There you go.
We are
There
playing in a competition where there's golf shop credit
you
to be
go.
had.
There you
That's
go.
your L, that's your L score.
That's the L score. Yeah. So
The
I
guy
don't
that always
know.
is dressed in that new Peter Millar.
You're like, I could have sworn that was just introduced into the pro shop yesterday. How'd you get it so soon? Been saving up some credit, huh? Yeah.
Oh man, what would we do without him? Okay, next topic on sandbagging. I have a theory. If you show me a sandbagger, I'll show you somebody who says, "I had an injury. I was hurt
Yeah.
last year. I it was on my arm. It's broken." Rodney Dangerfield.
Yes.
Why is that? This whole injury stuff, we know why, because they were hurt, and that's why their handicap went way up. What does the system actually say about injuries? Because they do happen and they do affect our performance.
Correct. Well, one, the proper protocol when you do have an injury is to let the handicapped chairman of your club know, because they're the ones who are officially responsible of modifying your handicap index if the injury is deemed that, severe enough to where it is affecting your ability to play golf. Because some injuries, hey, whatever the case may be, I, bruised my arm or something, but I could still swing.
Right.
That's not going to affect. But what also what the system does is it goes kind of one layer deeper, is it says, okay, if you are injured, we want you to play a couple rounds first, and then we can deem how injured you are and make the appropriate modification based off of actual data that you posted, which is
Right.
nice. And so essentially what you're getting is a handicap in a modified handicap index based off of scores posted based off of your new ability while injured until, you're back to normal.
Yeah, and again, the hard cap and soft cap would also, I mean, we always tend to look at handicaps, going one direction and not both directions. Because if you had a legitimate injury, it's very possible that you're going to be playing with an index you can't play to for quite a while. And the hard cap
Oh,
and soft cap
100%.
are going to keep you from playing. Actually, it's not even fairly adjusting for your now, your injury, and you really can't. So it seems like the handicap committee would be well within its rights to raise your handicap so that you can be competitive during that time when you're recovering from injury or whatever it may be.
100%. Because one of the two of the biggest questions we get is, "Hey, I'm hard capped. I've had an injury. Like, why isn't it changing?" Well, the system doesn't know when you get injured. It only knows the information that you put into it. Doesn't ask, "Did you get injured today? You look like, based on your score, it's
How are you feeling
how
today?
are you feeling today? Happy face or frowny face?"
Yeah.
I wish it did, but it
Yeah.
doesn't. So it's up
Yeah.
to, there's a little accountability on the golfer to say, "Hey, I'm injured, and I can't play the way I used to. I need my handicap to reflect that." And then the other thing is, how, if I'm a, committee member A, how much do I modify this golfer? Because there are some injuries, some diagnoses even, that the golfer may never return to that ability ever again, based off
Yeah.
of whatever the
Right.
case may be. So in cases like that, that's the perfect time when, instead of just throwing a random number out there, we need that golfer to play some golf so we can accurately see or assess what the new potential of the golfer is based off of that injury. And so that is probably the highest number of calls that I get throughout the season is, "Hey, I have an injured member. He got in a car accident or some sort of diagnosis. He no longer plays to his b ability based off of his handicap index 2 years ago. What do I do?" And
Yeah.
so what I always say is, "Well, does he, has he played golf since then?" Then what we do is we essentially use, there's a table in the rules of handicapping in 5.2A that, based on how many scores he's posted or she, we make a modified in handicap index based off of the scores posted after injury. So,
Yeah.
yeah.
Okay, next topic. Equitable
Next
stroke
topic.
control. Does that even exist anymore, that term?
ESC is gone.
Okay,
Correct.
what's so it's now just net double bogey.
Net double bogey. Correct.
Okay, so again, this is another sandbagging, isn't it? That's why we do it. So explain, because I mean, if you think about it, you played a perfect round of golf, you get to the 18th hole and you make a 20 and you post, no, we're not
Correct.
going to let you do that. Because again, we're trying to predict your ability everybody has a blow up hole now and again, and we're not going to allow that to be an escape hatch for you to avoid posting a score that. I know you probably talk about it more than any other topic. Explain that double bogey.
Yeah, all net double bogey is a maximum score that you can get on any one hole based off of your course handicap. So again, your course handicap can change based off of the tees you play. So the shorter the tees, the lower your course handicap. The longer, more hard the tees are, or more difficult the tees are, the higher your course handicap, or the more strokes needed to play to your potential. If you have, say, a one, that means you get one pop on the hardest hole on the course, meaning on one hole you are allowed to have one triple bogey. And then if
Right.
you're an 18, that means you are allowed to have triple bogey as the maximum score on any hole on the course. Otherwise, anything higher than that will essentially, you can post it on your scorecard, but it will not be that score when you post to gin. That's also another question that we get as a committee. Hey, I shot a, whatever the case may be, but in gin it actually shows this. Like, why is that? Well, because of net double bogey, the maximum score that anybody can post. Again, not to, say that you didn't say it, you didn't play that way. It's just to make sure that when you do post around like that, you don't, artificially increase your handicap based off of one bad round.
Right. That was the origin of the Stableford scoring system. Dr. Frank Stableford was playing a great round of golf, blew up on a couple holes, and ended up, he said, "Why don't we come up with a point system where the worst you can do is get a zero on a hole and still accumulate all the good work you've accumulated over the other 16 holes?" So, similar idea. Next topic, cap patrol. I have heard about this from a lot of different, and I mean, this has been around a while. Seems to me that cap patrol, and I'll let you explain what that is mainly its main, and maybe it's a byproduct of the price and the subscription fee. Isn't it? A lot of private clubs seem to use cap patrol. I don't know if that's true or not. But to explain what cap patrol is and what its purpose is.
Well, before I do that, the USGA would be annoyed if I didn't say that there was one handicap index modifier and indicator, and that would be the USGA handicap review tool, which is kind of the ultimate tool in regards to modifying a handicap index and providing recommended handicap index modification. Now, that said, there are tools out there that can
Any
aid.
rebroadcast, reproduction, or otherwise use of this? Okay, got that
Correct.
done.
But anyway, that said, there are tools out there that aid
Oh,
in
and by
this.
the way, Aaron, I get paid by Cap Patrol. That's why I'm on their
Oh, is that
advisory.
oh,
No,
I
I,
was wondering.
yeah,
Like,
yeah.
okay. But Cap Patrol is it's been around as long as, well, maybe not as it's been around for a while, let's put it that way. But what it does is it actually connects to the person or the club's tee time system, and it actually shows when a golfer played and when the golfer posted, and not only that, but what the golfer posted and as it relates to what their handicap index, what their low handicap index is, and then a bunch of other data points that you can choose to show or not show based off of the level of subscription you have, I believe is how it works. I haven't
Yeah, and
used
just to
it
be,
personally.
I should have started with this disclaimer. Cap Patrol is a third party for
Correct.
profit, but I always applaud innovation, no matter where it's coming from. Sometimes the best innovation's coming from outside the people like us that are on the inside of the forest. And I think it's pretty cool when you see probably a well and you know a software engineer who's a member of XYZ Club and said, I have an idea. And they created this system that plugs into your tee sheet, then it really does. The idea is it's a peer review tool, is really what it is. So it's at making the system better. And I know I don't know it the way you do, but I would assume the USGA would be all for it.
Yeah, no, that's why they allow it to look at its data. Again, it's a third-party tool, which the USGA is kind of trying to build in a review tool similar to Cap Patrol, within the gin system itself. So there isn't a, 100% need for a third party, but in this case, it just adds to the value of the handicap index because Cap Patrol just shows you data And then based on that data, it's up to the committee to determine if there's enough evidence to make a modification or, whatever the case may be in terms of that golfer. Anything to help prevent sandbagging, I feel like a club will be willing to use, especially if it's good and provides actual data-based facts. For
Right.
me, anybody who calls me, somebody says so and so is cheating, I'm like, well, do you have any data? If there is data, then you have a case. Otherwise, it's
Yeah.
just hearsay. I hate to sound like a lawyer, but that's kind of what
Yeah.
it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So we have two more things to cover as we're getting deep into the conversation here. And we can say we could easily spend a lot more time on the very meaty topic of sandbagging.
Yeah.
Talk about and it sounds like this may have already come and gone, the Dean Knuth points or scoring system. Dean Knuth was the inventor of the slope system. He was a very smart dude and known as the Pope of Slope. Now it's long since retired from the USGA, but he did in his retirement years come up with a system that seemed to be gaining some traction at one point. And maybe all the other things you've talked about up until now have made this rendered it, I wouldn't say obsolete, but maybe not quite as well adopted as it once was.
Yeah, when I first started with the CWGA and CGA is kind of when I heard about the Dean Knuth point system. But essentially what it is, for those of you who don't know, it's you're awarded a certain amount of points based on however, the top three, top five, top 10 finishes in a big time competition. And then based on however many times you finished or you placed and however many points you earned over a period of time, whether it be 3 months, 6 months, a year, if you had a lot of points, you were then essentially assessed a subtraction of your course handicap or your handicap index. It was essentially basis for the committee to decrease your handicap based off of your prior playing competition. Before the WHS, I knew of a few clubs still using that kind of as an aside or, in addition to. Recently, I honestly don't. I haven't heard of too many clubs that still use the Knuth point system. It's a
Yeah.
good system then. I don't know if it's still good, but I don't know if too many clubs still use it.
Yeah, probably because the system has gotten better and the need for it has gone away.
Yeah.
So many innovations, advancements, hard cap, soft cap, all the provisions that, even the taking the eight versus the 10 best. So many things that I'm sure the only people frustrated by all that are the sandbaggers. And speaking of
Right.
that, this is the final piece, and this is a surprise to you, Aaron. But we
Okay.
have with us today a real live sandbagger, and we thought it would be fun to bring him in now and talk about what he's learned based on the conversation we've had so far, and kind of just get inside the head of a sandbagger. And he's our very own Aaron Kello. And as he unmutes and comes out from behind the curtain. He may disappoint. I'm not sure he's even listening, but I bet he is. He is the only CGA staff member to have won a state championship, to my knowledge. And this goes back to 1998, I believe. I may be wrong. He won the CGA net four ball. And from that day forward, he became known as the best sandbagger on the CGA staff. He is the reason we stopped running the net four ball. And
I am not the reason.
I would love to. Okay, so now, Aaron, I'm glad you're listening. What have you learned? Because you're representing all the sandbaggers out there, and because you are one, let's be honest. And you're a sandbagger. And tell us what you're going to do differently now that you know some of the tools of the trade, so to speak.
Well, I'm not going to do anything differently because apparently whatever I'm doing is working. I would have to say I fall into the category of the guy who plays better in competition than I do when I'm hacking around with my buddies. So take what you will from that, but I focus, I play a little bit harder, I care a little bit more. If I'm playing, let's say, match play against Ed Mate,
Little gamesmanship. Hey,
I
that's not a good
revel.
example because we're dealing with something that's so fragile there that you can't
Oh,
even.
well, I revel in the here's the great thing about that is riding in the same cart with your opponent. and watching him seethe. I've never seen anybody seethe after I drop a one-handed 20-footer putt in, and he doesn't say a word to me for like two holes. It was brilliant. So I would say, just to clarify, I am the only staff member, current or in the last 27 years, to own a CGA state championship.
No, I said that. I introduced you with that
Right.
little
Not
recording
a
nugget.
net.
Oh, I got
Yeah.
you.
No,
I got you.
it doesn't matter. It's a CGA state championship. And it was
Well,
at the.
no, in all seriousness, so Aaron Kello
It was on the.
is a very good putter. He's a very good putter. He's also a very good dart bowler, you name it.
Cool.
He's a very good hand at pool. And his handicap, this kind of goes to not all 18s or 20s are the same. Aaron is very dangerous inside 100 yards. He's not so great outside 100 yards. He's going to hit enough tops, skulls, shanks. But boy, once you get him near the green, and particularly on the green, and that's why I love bringing Aaron to tournaments
Well,
where, like a Shamble, where they still give strokes. Because man, if you give him 150 yards in and a chance, he's going to do some damage with his whatever handicap he's carrying these days.
at altitude, Aaron Greca learned that sea level is a
Oh
whole,
yeah.
well, and honestly, so hey, there's another thing, Greca, while we're talking about this traveling handicap, how come it doesn't account for altitude adjustments? Because you and I both put it in the water on that par three.
Well, that was our doubles golf team preparation. We didn't do quite the team woo-saw
Oh,
session before,
right.
you know,
We
before the
didn't
event. So
play the practice round. We didn't hit a ball in the range. I don't know.
we showed up and went right to the first tee. So the adequate amount of preparation there was not had. So that's what I'm blaming that on.
Oh, fair
Although
enough.
Mr. One-Handed Putter, I was waiting for him to show up, but
Yeah, I couldn't even. Yeah, I can't even putt at sea level. It's so bad.
So Aaron, let's wrap this up. It's fun to have you unmuted because just a chance for you to celebrate all your great talents here with our growing
Oh,
listening audience.
well,
My favorite
honestly,
my, my
I,
wait, wait a minute. I'm gonna what's my
yeah, go
favorite
ahead.
line on sandbagging is Dave Marr, who said, "Never trust a man." I guess he said man, person with an 8 handicap. A deep suntan who carries a 2 iron. So that's a pretty good advice.
Yeah, I love it.
Aaron, do you have any other sandbagging isms? Kello?
No, I'd have to say, never trust a man who putts one-handed.
Don't bet a man
Or
who putts 1 hand, that's for sure.
Greg,
Aaron, I'm going to give you, Greg, I'm going to give you the last word. What do you think our listeners, if they listened all the way through, you need to know about sandbagging? Those who are, let me just ask you more different, a little differently. For those who are so frustrated and cynical, says everybody cheats, and sandbagging, the handicap system doesn't work because there's always a sandbagger. Wherever you go, there's going to be a sandbagger. What is your response to that?
yeah, well, I mentioned it a little earlier. Cheaters will always find a way to cheat, but now the system has built such that it is ever expanding. So those cheaters are becoming few and far between. And when they do decide to game the system, it is very easy now, or it's easier for somebody to catch them.
That's a pretty good place to put a pin in it.
I
So
think
nice
so.
thought as we end the year. This is the December podcast of Spirit of the Game. And for those sandbaggers out there that are still listening, a lump of coal is coming into your stocking very soon. So Aaron, thanks for joining. We're going to do one more of these to kick off the year, the third and final installment of course rating and handicapping with our very own Aaron Gorecka. And Kello, good having you out from behind the microphone.
I think you just wanted me to prove I was listening.
That too.
Yes.
It is performance review time of year after all.